It's my pleasure this morning to introduce our next speaker. But Leah Beale hardly needs an introduction to this group, having attended every arts conference since 1987. And I want to point something out here. This is going to be a presentation about us, about many people in the audience. And here we have the Beales taping the presentation by the Beales, which includes tapes that they've made in this circumstance. I mean, the self-referentiality of that is just mind-blowing. Anyway, Leah recently earned her MFA in TV production at CUNY Brooklyn. Her presentation this morning and the world premiere of Off the Record are outgrowths of her thesis project. When I asked Leah how she'd like to be introduced, she wrote back and she said, "Read this." Born and raised in Kentucky, Leah Beale hightailed it out as soon as she could for the concrete pastures of New York City. She inherited her collector's gene from her father, which still infuriates her mother. Leah's current project is the pursuit of a paying job. Please join me in welcoming our good friend, Leah Beale.
Good morning. And thanks for showing up so early on a Saturday morning. I know I wouldn't be here if I didn't have to be. What you are about to see will astound you. Not really, but that's actually the point. Many of you know some or most of the people in my documentary, but all of you can appreciate and understand all of the people and all of their attitudes about recordings, collecting, and how it's a part of their lives. When I first proposed this topic to my Master of Fine Arts committee at Brooklyn College, this was my first and only topic, record collecting and record collectors. They suggested that I be a little more generic and discuss the psychological phenomenon of collecting in general, but that's been done. And I wasn't going for a psychology degree, and I would not do a negative exposé of the dysfunctional personalities of collectors. Because these people are my friends, my family, and myself. And besides, films looking negatively at record collectors have also already been done. As part of the required academic review of the literature, I looked at some of these. First of all, Alan Zweig's theatrical documentary, Vinyl, justifiably difficult to find at the present, except online, disproportionately emphasizes negative aspects of his subjects, including himself.
Yeah, well, that's what all the food say. I would say that collecting probably wasn't the cause of their death, but it was a symptom of their mental problems. Some people who collect use collecting as a means to avoid facing up to things in their life that they've never actually ever been able to resolve. Probably collecting has been a way for me to be my own person without having to be ridiculed or basically abused verbally. You know? So I'd say that people who do collect sometimes can be people who have mental problems, and if they can't resolve them, they often can die of basically self-neglect.
I would make an attempt to divest myself, push myself to be a better person, to live a clearer life, etc., etc. I have to sell some things that would hurt to sell. I pretty well regret it every day since. I mean, not only do I regret not having vinyl, but the truth is, and this is like the crux of this story, the truth is that having that CD, though it eases the pain somewhat in another way, it doesn't help at all and even makes it worse. I do not have a feeling for any CD like I have for some vinyl, especially the vinyl that I don't have anymore.
I got this one down with a scratch.
Oh, mine's pretty bad too.
Look at that. Oh, I love Billy Bond.
That's so bad. You would say, the music's the same. You either like the tune or you don't like the tune. And it's like, well, yeah, the music is the most important thing. I wish it were the only thing. It's not. I'd be better off if it were the only thing. But it isn't. Now, if it were the only thing, there'd be no film here.
Yeah, we could hope. Fictional films like Ghost World by Terry Zwigoff, based on the graphic novel by Daniel Clowes, show an introspective lonely collector, hungering for some human interaction, especially female. Possibly based on his friend R. Crumb, shown here with his and his collection, note the similarity of Crumb's collection with Seymour's.
And where do you go to there?
Really?
records?
I've got about 1,500 78s at this point. I'm trying to pare down my collection to just the essential.
You are like the luckiest guy in the world. I would kill to have stuff like this.
Please, I'm Joanie.
Siskel and Ebert had some comments along these lines in 1982 when discussing a scene in Diner.
Gene starts with a sensitive movie about growing up in Baltimore. It's called Diner.
Our first one, I think, is one of the year's best. A portrait of a bunch of young men in Baltimore in 1959 growing up, or failing to grow up. The film also explores the way some of these men relate to the women in their lives. Here's a scene with Daniel Stern arguing with his wife on the parking about her carelessness with his prized record collection. That really rings true, and that's what Dark consists of, moments like, just like that. These are characters we think we know when the movie is over. We identify with them, we understand them because we live moments like they are living. Diary is about slices of interesting lives, and I'm always ready to see a picture that shows that.
You know, I love the picture too. I hate to admit it, but I really identify with that guy in his own my records, you know, they better look out.
It's much the same with the characters in High Fidelity. Originally a book, and then a short-lived Broadway musical, which I actually kind of liked, after having been this movie. We do get to see a variety of personalities in this film, but none of them are truly normal. Perhaps closer to my ideal is the theatrical documentary Desperate Man Blues. Despite its pessimistic-sounding title, it is a positive view of a thoroughly interesting personality, Joe Bussard, who happens to have a phenomenally important collection of what is now being called American Roots music. Both his collection and his life are happy and well-organized. Despite the similarity of Bussard to R. Crumb's cartoon record-hunting collector, that dysfunctional Bussard ain't.
I first met Joe 2 years ago when I was in there to do a story on him. And you never forget when you go in his basement for the first time because it's like going into another world. Not only was the music loud, you know, the smoke was thick, he was dancing. It was hard to even get a line of what was going on. And after I got to know him more, you sense the real aesthetic theory behind all that enthusiasm. And just from that phone conversation, I knew this guy is different than the other collectors I talked to. There's something going on here. And I think his collection is such that it's almost been whittled down to the jewels. I mean, he just doesn't have a lot of junk. A lot of people have a lot of records, but he's got a lot of good ones.
Well, I've been collecting records door to door for about 47 or 48 years.
He's 16 years old when he started really going to the South to look for records, which was really unheard of. His parents didn't like it at all. And he's done it his whole life. And I mean, what he's been able to accomplish and put together, when you look at the records, is amazing.
Interesting people, interesting country, beautiful country down here in the mountains, 50s, early, middle 60s, Florida, Georgia, very different body Adam. And you just live in one area and it's not all the way along. Sometimes you get in areas, you find just one or two labels for only a distributor around there. Then you get another area and find another label. Then you get an area where all the labels were distributed.
This happened to be such a beautiful copy. This is patent about 29 or late 28. What a record. What an artist.
When I was a little girl, I used to play in his record room when I was only about 3 years old. So they were always a part of my life. He used to make little record shows with me and did recordings. I think my first word was recorded on one of his tapes in his room. So they've always been there. My mother, she loved bluegrass. Country music and bluegrass, it was her thing. It's pretty much all I ever grew up listening to.
I didn't care what people thought of me. I liked what I liked, and I told them, and I didn't mess around.
I set out to show the world some of the collectors I knew and knew of, who have made enviable use of their knowledge and their collections to better themselves and others. With the help of my father, we put together a list of collectors who are quite varied in their interests, their type of collections, and the usages they have made of it. Then we hit the road. On the highway in Canada leading to David Lennox, we were astounded to pass a road sign leading the way to collectors. Did we just see what we just saw? We circled around several times to double check and get some video of it, and it will be seen leading the way to the collectors. Some of the subjects are discographers and authors. Some are broadcasters. Some are reissue producers. Some are restoration engineers, and all of them have evidenced a willingness to share their resources and expertise with others freely and openly. Some have specialized collections, but others are generalists, occasionally accused of being accumulators rather than collectors. Is content more important than the artifact? In all of our cases, we have found people interested in the artifact, and most are also interested in the content of at least part of their collections. The one person in my documentary who is probably known to none of you is Terry Salmonson, a collector and dealer of old-time radio. OTR collectors are most notable in general of being content collectors with little or no interest or knowledge of the original artifacts. After all, most broadcast recording are either one of a kind or were pressed in very limited quantities. Terry is one of the few OTR collectors with large collections of original discs, although my dad still has trouble convincing him of the importance of including matrix numbers when he's cataloging the pressings of syndicated programs. He's one of the two collectors we were unable to visit in his lair, which is unfortunate because naturally his is the collection that my father most wanted to be able to delve through in person.
My name is Fred Williams, and I'm a record collector, age 83. Been doing it since 1949, Christmas 1949.
We feel ourselves honored and fortunate to have been able to visit and document Fred Williams in his home, just months before his fall, which placed him in a care facility just 5 tantalizing minutes from his home. He might not ever be able to see his collection again. The house, it's just too dangerous for him. All in all, we recorded over 42 hours of interviews and collection tours, a figure that astounded one of my committee members. Even here at ARSC, my father and I are often asked, what do you do with all these recordings? You'll now find out. I was only able to include a tiny taste of what we have of every year, except for 1989, going back to 1985, but I'll expand a little right now. We needed silent pictures of two of ARSC's founders, Philip L. Miller and David Hall. We're still looking for more, but here, with sound, is Phil getting his lifetime ARSC membership from my father in 1986.
Therefore, be it resolved that Philip Leeson Miller be declared an honorary member of the association. Would Phil please come forward? We don't have, as I said, a certificate, but I do have a presentation to make. Phil, you have been with us and with the recorded sound industry for such a long time. You have seen it grow from acoustical recordings to the electrical 78s to the microgroove record. And now I would like to present a little gift here. This is a compact disc. Now, some of the people last night saw what this is. There's a picture of Edison on the front of this, with the Washington machine, of course, but he's holding a compact disc. And there are recordings of Edison on here, and this is the label on this compact disc. And so this is a present to you as a token of your honorary membership. Would you like to say something?
There isn't very much I can say except thank you all. And, well, we do what we can.
My father says that Phil was a man of few words. Too few at this occasion, I might add. The tape of David Hall's presentation about the Mercury Living Presence Chicago Symphony recordings got messed up by a video head clog, but we found some tape of David answering some Mapleson Cylinder questions from the back of the room in Chicago. One of the fun parts of my father's video archive is the legendary Syndicate, the meetings of the Record Research Associates, instigated by the legendary Lenny Kunstadt. My father attended these meetings between 1975 and 77, and was later able to videotape one of them after attending the second day of an ARSC executive board meeting in New York City on Saturday, October 27, 1984. We've got DVDs of the unedited tape here to sell. On it, you'll see the famous confrontation between famous record producer Milt Gabor and inquiring collector Hal Flaxer. Is that okay, Dad? Okay?
Yeah.
That's not in For the Record, although it would have been very funny if we had. Here's just a portion of Hal's exasperating run-on questions.
Last time we did, I really enjoyed answering questions put to me by members of the audience.
That's in July of 1941. I have the exact date and I'm wearing, but that's not important. But it was in July 41, there was some better issue to the Spanish blank 21,000 servants that arrived for Argentinian audience. According to the files, they were assigned New York City's massive numbers. Thank you.
A couple of weeks ago, Lloyd Rausch asked me if I included him in the documentary. We only see him fleetingly, but in the original, he comes in with the perfect comment when Carl Canzioria and Lenny are discussing a very rare record right over where Lloyd's sales table is. This turned out to be the next-to-last meeting Carl Canzioria attended. He died of cancer only a few months later. It's also unfortunate that my father only got a few seconds of his good friend George Blacker talking. Without thinking, he shut the camera off when George came over to talk to him. Although we're selling the Syndicate DVDs for $10, if you were at the Syndicate meeting and see yourself, we'll give you a copy, even if you were in disguise like Tim Brooks was. Speaking of hairy disguises, my father pulled a practical joke on me. During the summer of 07, when we were traveling around to do the interviews, we didn't have a chance to be in Kentucky long enough to do his interview. So we planned to do it by long distance with his camera and me on the phone in Brooklyn. During the time that passed, he let his hair and beard grow long. When he had his heart incident in February 08, he still hadn't been able to play his joke, so he still looked like a homeless bum. He had to continually apologize at the hospital for looking so much scruffier than usual. When he regained enough strength to do the interview, this is what he sent to freak me out.
I've been collecting records.
Other than a brief mention when Tim discusses Jim Walsh, we were not able to get into one of the attributes of a great many record collectors. Cats. Can I have a show of hands? How many of you are or have ever been owned by a cat? See? I could go on, but I hope you are all ready to see the program. It's an hour, twice the length two-thirds of my thesis committee wanted our projects to be. I selected the title For the Record, not knowing that this had been the title of my father's column in the Arsk Journal many, many, many years ago. By the way, I have pulled a Hitchcock, and I can be seen twice in the program. The first time's near the beginning to just get it out of the way. So here's For the Record. I hope you'll enjoy it, and I hope you like it. We'll talk again after the picture. Thank you.
My name is Michael Beale.
Bill Bragg.
My name is Tim Brooks.
David Lennick.
My name is Rich Marco.
I'm Peter Moldaven.
R. Peter Munvies.
I'm Kurt Nock.
Graham Newton.
I'm Steve Ram.
Dennis Rooney.
My name is Joe Salerno.
Terry Salmonson.
My name is Ray Weil.
My name is Fred Williams.
Seth B. Winner. What else you want to know?
Sweetheart, I love you, think the world of you, but I'm afraid you don't care for me. You never show it, don't let me know it. Everyone says I'm a fool to be pining the whole day through. Why do you act like you do? Why must you be mean to me? Oh, gee, honey, it seems to me you love to see me crying. Please tell me why I stay at home each night when you say you'll phone. You don't, and I'm left alone, just singing the blues and sighing. You treat me coldly each day in the year. Always scold me whenever somebody is near, dear. It must be great fun for you. Can't you see what you're doing to me? Please tell me why you're so mean to me.
I try. Like I said, we've got copies of this, $10 if you want a copy of it, and see us after the auction closes, please. We got stuff to do. And I'll take any questions, I guess. Be gentle. Yes. Well, actually, in my literature study, of general collectors, actually, there was, I can't remember who did the study, but this person did a study on record collectors, and they only had, they said in order to properly represent what, the way the proportion is right, at present, we only have one woman in our sample to rip. I personally don't see it, and I'm sure there's a bias, and I didn't mean to only have men in this. But are there female collectors? Of course, but just men seem to be more prevalent.
They're more colorful.
Yes. Well, I guess I'm off the hook because I didn't work there at that time.
They didn't mess with his mind.
Yes, a question at the podium. Yeah, the mic.
I'd like to propose a small dedication of this film. And actually, there are women in most of these. The women behind the man.
Of course.
What we like to call the Arsk widows. So if you ever think about a dedication, you might want to dedicate it to all the women in the lives, or partners in the lives, or the cats in the lives of the collectors that are collected here and elsewhere. Thanks.
Yes.
Great job. What do you make of the association and the significance of this cat's business?
I don't know. Maybe the cat's claws are equivalent to needles. I don't know. It's just
a...
I don't know if you heard this. He said, cats can take care of themselves.
How many people picked up collections where cats have visited the collection and made it unusable?
Probably more than we'd like to admit, I guess. Possibly, and that could also mean soundtrack discs and that sort of that sort of connection as well. Yes, Rich.
You mentioned in your intro that you thought that Dan Klaus had based Seymour on Bob Crone, and I wanted to clarify about that.
Yes, please.
Because it's my feeling, having known Dan.
Sure. Okay.
Crumb's brother-in-law, and they actually shared enough similarities in the way they approached collecting and the way they set up their collections to have been genetically linked, but they were in-laws. And that apartment that they show in the party, except for the fact that it's at ground level, Marty's was a garden apartment, is almost exactly like Marty's old apartment.
Thanks, because I was just making a hypothesis, and I just, thanks for clarifying that. Yes, in the back. Because I'll tell you this much, my committee would not let me show it on our local community access BCAT BCAT channel because it was an hour. They said we only do half an hour. We only show half an hour shows except for special occasions. But I can see there's a point around 30 minutes where this can be split off into part one and part two. But they didn't want to do that. So the person who was surprised that I had recorded so much tape said, trim it down and then get back to me. Well, he won't take 2 half hours, so I'd like to, I'd like to see it somewhere. God knows I'd like to see it somewhere, but... Monday is Doc Day, I guess, possibly. The documentary night on Sundance. There's also a documentary channel that's there's always the possibility. But, I want to see this out there. I want to see other people watch this.
You won't see it on BET.
I'm sorry. I know, the only black things in there were the records. I know. I apologize. I'm sorry.
Insert Vinny, maybe we'll.
Yes.
So the next time will be institutional collections that we only did private collections. That's why you weren't there, Vinny.
I'm a private collector too, man.
You're institutionalized.
Yes. Hold on a second. Steve, you had a question? Right.
The next part of this. And also, this looks like a great follow up to a greatest hits from the Antique Roadshow thing during the fundraising. Yeah, I mean, this is a programming idea. If you might want to get into this.
Yes. Right.
Because this is so relevant, it's just institutional collectors using somebody else's money, and that's really fun.
Anyone else? Well, then, thank you.